You are listening to the Bad Duo Back in Action Punk News Podcast number 295. Yes, this is Features Editor John Gentile, and tonight we're just doing a stripped down, old school, Ramon style, bare bones, punk news podcast. Features Editor John Gentile with the other half of the Bad Duo, Managing Editor Adam White. Adam White, what's it like being half of the double-barreled shotgun that is you and I?
Far too clingy and touchy.
Clingy and touchy. Well,
we need space. I need like a what is it? What's that personal space bubble you're supposed to have? Is it like 3 feet?
Oh yeah, I think it's like 3 feet of personal space.
3 feet. I need 3 feet of personal space, John.
You know, that's not true in all, like in some countries, like even if like if you're on like a train and there's no one else on the train, like people will come up and stand right next to you in some countries.
Yeah, I mean, you hear all these stories about people that, like, they get on a bus and they're the only person on a bus, and then, like, some creepy guy gets on and sits, like, right next to them as opposed to all the other seats. And, yeah, personal space is important, so, you know, back off.
Back off, man.
Back off.
So what's happening, Adam White, man? What's happening? I'm trying to think. I'm seeing Tal Cross tomorrow night, which is Rob Miller of Amoebics. I'm seeing Bad Canoes this weekend. I'm excited about that. Bad Canoes is the synth punk band featuring Marissa Paternoster, Screaming Females. Phenomenal band. What's happening with you, Adam White, over there?
Oh, this weekend is Grays and Adonis. I probably just mangled their name here. Odonis, whatever, however you pronounce that. Adonis, whatever. Anyways, they're awesome. Both of them from Toronto, both of them on Buzz Records. The Adonis guys actually run the thing, and they are like, they're an insane band if you've never seen them or heard them or anything like that. Like some sort of mix of, like, I want to say, like, almost like early Nine Inch Nails-y industrial and punk and shoegaze, and like it's all over the place. It's great. Anyways, they're playing in Hamilton, so I gotta drive up to the Hammer and go see that, because I've never seen them live, but I love their records so much. So that's on the immediate radar. And then we're not too far off from Record Store Day, are we?
We are not. Record Store Day is not this weekend, but next weekend. Are you gonna ham it up? Are you gonna slam it down and get those slabs of vinyl? Or are you gonna hold back?
I was originally not going to bother, but the more that I think about it, I kind of like the idea of, I don't know why this appeals to me right now, but I kind of want to go at like 7:30 in the morning and get like my like big Tim Hortons coffee and stand there in line in a scummy area of Niagara Falls where no one would rightfully be at 7:30 in the morning unless you were like a person of the night, and you know, I kind of want to go there and get in line and go and buy records I don't need. I don't know, it really seems like a thing I want to do right now, and I'm not sure what has turned me around on this, but I'm probably going to head down to SRC Vinyl and do that. So that's my plan.
Listen, man, I mean, despite the fault of Record Store Day, it is a very fun event. Is I've gone to Record Store Day, I guess, 5 or 6 years now, and literally every single time that I've gotten online, I've had a blast just talking with people about records, because generally the people there early in the morning are record maniacs, and you can talk about whatever with them with records.
Yeah, and that's what seems like it's going to be more interesting to me. Like, I'm not really looking forward to like walking in there and dropping $100 on something, but I want to wait in line and then be in a busy record store for some reason. So that's what I'm in it for. That's what I'm doing.
The only drawback is there's the flippers, which they're always creepy, and I don't know if they do it anymore, but a couple of years ago, like, companies or at least individuals would hire people to go to Record Store Day to buy records, and then like they would pay them to do that, and like those people were always creepy, but like flippers are usually really creepy. And the other one is, listen, don't be this guy at Record Store Day. Like, when you're hanging out in line and you don't want to be the jazz guy, but the like let's say you see a guy wearing, I don't know, a a Nirvana t-shirt and you're like, oh man, Nirvana's cool. And then that guy's like too cool for you because he knows way more about Nirvana. Don't be about that. Don't be that guy. My advice to you is whatever level someone approaches you at in music discussion, discuss with them at that level and don't try to like outscoop them when it comes to the music knowledge. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, don't be an ass in general is kind of a good life strategy there. So what are we doing this week? It's just you and me. There's no Ricky, so there's no one to inject sanity into this. So we're gonna talk about a bunch of stories that happened. We have any mail before we get going?
We do. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is from Brendan way down under. Here's what Brendan had to say. Hi, Punk News. Enjoying the shows still as you plow through to episode 300. Just wanted to give some insight to a discussion you had a few episodes back in regards to $30 for a ticket to see a great sounding gig headlined by Flag. For you guys in Canada and stateside, it sounded like $30 was on the expensive side for tickets. That sounds like a luxury to us Australians. The cost of tickets in Australia to see our favorite international bands is so expensive, but won't stop the true fans as it is potentially the only chance we will get to see our favorite overseas acts. To give an example, I'm seeing Modern Baseball in a 400 capacity venue and the ticket cost is $30, and that's cheap. A strung out gig supported by Pairs cost $70. Bronx, Joyce Manor, AJJ, Cheap Girls, Cloud Nothings all cost more than the Flag show coming to a town near you. So please, anyone who is considered going to the Flag gig or any other gig of your favorite band and is put off by the price, please go for me. I'd love the privilege of paying $30 to see Flag, and that's from Brendan. Brendan, thank you for writing us.
Oh man, I bought my Flag tickets the other day when I saw that they were like $30. I was like I had this moment where I was just like, ah, oh, fuck, really? Like, oh shit. Well, okay, yeah, so I'm not going to complain about that anymore.
See, what's interesting is I actually don't quite have that instinct because long before I went to punk shows, I saw like the Rolling Stones and AC/DC and David Lee Roth, and those tickets, well, back then they were like $75 to $150, and now they're like ridiculous, like $300. And then after that, I went to see metal shows, which are always more expensive than punk shows. Like a metal show, $25 is the price for a metal show, you know? And so when I started going to punk gigs, I was like $8? This is insane. One of the first punk gigs I saw was Ian McKay and Amy Farina doing the Evens, and it was $5. And afterwards, I said to Ian, like, you could go up to him and, like, buy a record or whatever. I said, how come it's only $5? And he said, don't ask questions. And so that's what he said. And so, although, honestly, within the past 3 or 4 years, because I mainly go to, quote, punk gigs or whatever, my tolerance for $30 has dipped. To me, $30 used to be the fair price for a show. Now I do think it's a little high. So I have to check myself and say, listen, I spent $30 to see Judas Priest with Tim Ripper Owens and not Rob Halford in like 1998. So $30 to see Flag is a bargain. So
see, I'm super spoiled about this because like the guys that book my local, like I'm in a small town and the guys that book all of the local shows here, basically, they're friends of mine and I get this like still, even though they know that I'm not useful to them at all, like this weird amount of like punk news privilege, I guess, with them, like this celebrityness where like I'll show up and they'll be like, come in, and I'll be like, but the show is like $8. I can just pay for the show. And they're like, no, come in. And I'm like, oh fuck. So then I end up like spending like $40 on merch because I'm like, ah. Oh. I feel like I'm taking money out of the band's mouth here.
Yeah, but actually, you know what? That's a smart thing is if a band invites you to go someplace for free, you should probably. I mean, if they're inviting you because they really want you to do a review, you know, that's kind of quid pro quo. But if,
no, I'm useless
but,
to them.
But I'm saying if they invite you in, you're better off buying merch because if a band keeps inviting you for free and they don't get anything out of it, they might start to sour on you. But if you play fair and buy merch or whatever, then they still like you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so whenever I'm in this situation, I'm trying to like I'll, you know, make sure I like, you know, give the bar some money and then like go buy something from a band. And like to the point where like I like the last time I was there, like I went and I bought something from one of the bands that I did not need particularly. Or like we there was a show with the Dirty Nil and Solids that were playing and I went and I own the last Solids LP and that's the only one that they have and the new one isn't out yet. So I'm there at their merch table and I'm like, well, I'll buy a shirt or something. So you have medium shirt. And they're like, well, no. I'm like, well, I'm looking and I'm like, John, you grew up in the 90s, so you're probably similar to me in this way, is that there was a time when all of my clothing was like fucking extra large. And I don't know why. I wasn't a huge guy or anything. I didn't need to wear extra large clothing, but like it was the 90s and I had like all these extra large everythings. So there's a part of my brain that was like recoiling and went like, no, don't buy a large shirt. You don't own any more large shirts, you idiot. So I bought a small.
Ooh.
And I got home and I'm like, small shirt. This is not going to fit me. And then it's going to go in my drawer and make me feel guilty for buying it. And then I put it on. It actually looks really good on me. So I'm like, ah, I just don't have to wash it. And then it won't fit me.
Adam White bragging about his sexy body. Whatever. Adam White, play a song while you're self-congratulating yourself.
Thank you. This is what this show is about. Is about how great. I stumbled upon this in the weirdest way, in that I was going to check out another song to play on tonight's show. I was going to play a song by one of these Toronto bands that I just keep playing songs by. And I was on SoundCloud and listened to their latest track, and then it ended. And then this other song just autoplayed because SoundCloud does that now. And I'm like, man, this band rules. What is this? And then I went and I looked them up, and this is them, so we're going to play them. This is a band called Culture Abuse. They are from, I'm pretty sure they're from the Bay Area, John, so they're from your old stomping ground.
My old stomping ground.
So this is from their debut LP, which is called Peach. It comes out this week, coincidentally enough, on 6131 Records. The song is called Dream On, and what really grabbed me about this song was the... While it is kind of just like a melodic hardcore song, the vocals give me this really huge like vibe of the Spits. Like there's this like reverby robotic-y-ness to the vocals, and that was a horrible description, but it's cool and I like it. I like it a lot. So this song is called Dream On. It is by Culture Abuse from their debut LP Peach on 6131 Records. we're back. Let's talk about some of the stuff that happened this past week. This one is an interesting one. John, this, I imagine, ticks all sorts of boxes for you, given the things that you talked about in the past. But here we go. According to Business Insider, Apple has been granted a patent on new technology that would allow audio streams to be audited and edited for explicit content in real time. This was outlined in a recently published patent application. The application was titled Management, Replacement, and Removal of Explicit Lyrics During Audio Playback. The technology boasts the ability to identify explicit words or terms in any audio source and replace them either with a muted volume, a beep, or, unlike its predecessors, merely remove the word or phrase, leaving the remainder of the audio uninterrupted. Now, although the patent doesn't actually mean that this technology is going to be in the marketplace, so I don't think you need to necessarily worry that, you know, when you hop onto iTunes or Apple Music, it's going to start censoring your shit. It does raise some concern about the ever-evolving world of censorship and just what technology can do. So you can find a link to that full story on Punk News, and you can check out more of it. Get over to the original thing on Business Insider to find a little bit more about what was in the actual patent. John, this is scary.
Oh, I'm glad you say that. The more I listen to myself, well, on Facebook, I'm friends with some pretty punk rock people that are pretty far out there. Like, they'll be like, baby carrots are a government conspiracy to, you know, get you on some kind of program or something. And so the more I listen to myself, the more I sound like a conspiracy theory wacko. But my wacky thesis or my wacky hypothesis keeps getting supported by more and more empirical evidence. Adam White, have you ever seen the movie Wall-E with the robot?
John, not more than a week and a half ago, I bought my three-year-old a copy of Wall-E.
So in Wall-E, basically, humans have devolved into like these lumps that like sit in couches, and the machine does everything for them. And humans basically only exist to consume and be used as products themselves in Wall-E. And this is precisely what Apple is doing.
Wow, that was a leap. Okay, I wasn't expecting you to go there.
No, that's precisely what Apple is doing, and I'll get there. First of all, they're like, well, we might not use it in the business marketplace. Well, then why are you spending all this money to develop the program for the product and then all this money to get your patent? Of course you're going to use this somehow, either secretively or non-secretively. Apple, you assholes. Steve Jobs, you evil creature, you. Second, this shows that if they can pick out certain words, then that means that they have a record of every word spoken, every song played, text, and whatever. So anything that you say on the phone, Apple has records of it. And my mom goes on and on about this, and I agree with her. You know, in the Cold War era and before, they should say how horrible Russia was because they spy on each other. And we have willy-nilly run into our own panopticon and said, we have no privacy. We want companies and the government to know every single thing about us. We'll just give our information up for free. You can know everything about me, Apple. You can know the content of all my conversations. You can know everybody who I know. And further, this is a step in the other direction. Instead of us giving info to Apple, Apple is now taking that info and controlling content that you get. So basically, what Apple, this is the first step, mind you, of Apple basically deciding what you should and should not be exposed to. And I'm sure what you should be exposed to is helpful towards their brand. And what's not helpful towards their brand, you will not be exposed to. Further, it's them exposing, if they can control language, it means they can control thoughts and intellectual concepts and even ideas that you have access to. So whereas the internet used to be, and maybe to some degree still is, an infinite plane of information, each company, each of these jumbo companies that have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger and more control are now controlling the stream of information to you that's now more favorable to them. So this is the first or maybe even the 10th or 20th step of a large company taking the freedom that is the internet and actually wrapping chains around it and giving you just the stream that's beneficial to them that they want you to hear. And that's a very, very scary thing indeed. And these companies are so big, I don't know if there's a way to stop it. So my advice is just to keep the underground alive. So, you know, smaller companies or independent people, and keep that information alive if underground, because these big companies, they don't want you to know everything. They only want you to know what's helpful to them. And this is precisely a example of that. Adam White, do I sound like a wacky conspiracy theorist?
Yep. But I mean, my major concern, because I can look at this and I can rationalize all sorts of reasons why why maybe they would want this. And the reasons are all kind of boring. So, you know, maybe they want to have a version of a music service that, you know, you can turn on kids mode and then let your kids play with. And instead of them maintaining a whole separate library of kids material, they just turn on this creepy censorship robot that just like censors on the fly. And so maybe that's what they're doing. And that's, I don't actually believe that, but that's, I'm just trying to rationalize like the devil's advocate you about what this could be for.
So in that case, parents are saying, Apple, you can be our parent for us. Apple, you can raise our kid.
Well, that's, there's a little bit more of it where that is my concern. Like, are they, I don't know who this would be useful for. I don't see how it's useful to Apple in a mind control Skynet 1984 sense that you're thinking of it. I also don't see how it's useful from like a real world marketplace standpoint. Like I don't know who's the one that needs this. Are they trying to say like, oh, you could use Apple Music to stream music into your flower shop and it won't be offensive? I mean, I'm pretty sure you could go pick certain playlists that just wouldn't be offensive by the nature of the artists that you're picking, and you don't need Apple to like, you know, like live censor out songs for you.
I just had a thought, Adam, and this is pure conjecture. In countries like China and some other countries, they actually like censor the internet. I think like you can't get on Facebook in China or something like that. Could Apple be developing this so they can say to China, listen, we'll take out anything you don't want so your customers can buy our product? Is that a possibility?
I wish I had a bell. So many of the podcasts I like have bells and they can ring them. So I'm going to ring the bell like ding. Like, yeah, okay, that's probably actually what this is. that is an actual plausible use for this, in that if you do want to expose your stuff to Marketplace X and Marketplace X will not allow content that comes in from a certain reason, if you can, I don't know, make the authorities believe that you're doing their job for them, then maybe you get in there. I mean, I would not discount that as the actual reason to do it. There is a shit ton of people in China and there is a lot of money there. So that is, you know, maybe that's got something to do with it. That's far more plausible to me than whatever nonsense loose change babble you were spitting out earlier there. But yes, I'm going to go with China. That's my vote.
I stand by my babble. I hope I'm wrong, but we'll see who's laughing in 10 years. We'll see who's laughing in 20 years while I'm off living in my compound with shotguns. And
yeah, and like a robot with a giant apple for a head like crushes my skull in the like the dusty nuclear plane. Yeah. I mean, this is another reason why you should just go buy records, because no one's gonna censor your records. You know, I was once listening to, I think it was Apple Music, whatever song that was being played, the censored version of it came in, and it really drove me insane. What was I? Was it Apple Music? No, this is before Apple Music came out. It was the iTunes Match, which is a service you have where like it like takes your MP3 library and basically, if the MP3s don't exist in Apple's library, then like it uploads them to some place in the cloud where then you can download them from your other devices or stream them from your other devices. Or if they are already in Apple's library, it just uses their copy of it. So the way it works is that like, so if I have like this Bouncing Souls record as MP3s on my computer, then Apple, of course, also has a copy of that record in their iTunes, you know, server somewhere. So they don't need to upload my copy of Hopeless Romantics so that I can play it from my phone in my car. They go, okay, we see that you own Hopeless Romantics, so we'll give you access to it, but we're not going to actually upload your copy of the files because we already have the files. This is something in a computer world, John, that's called deduplication. But anyways, so they did that, but for whatever reason, it got screwed up. So the version that I was getting off of their stream was the censored version. And the ones that I had were the originals. And I remember it came in and I was just like, this isn't cool. Like, this feels dirty. I don't like this. So, you know, it's happened. That was the warning shot.
Along those lines, you know, I'm not a huge Green Day fan, but I listened to When I Come Around on Apple Music for the first time a little while ago. I didn't realize the lyrics were so weird on When I Come Around. Like the part about where Steve Jobs is God in flesh and you should give him all your money. I didn't remember that part on When I Come Around on Apple Music.
I know. And that they made it into like a 16-minute droning thing and then they require you to chant it.
Yeah.
Like that's,
yeah. Yeah. Mm. But anyway, speaking of chanting, Dag Nasty, they've released the new 7-inch. And actually, it's kind of a big deal because Dag Nasty has reunited, but with their original singer, Sean Brown, not a Dave Smalley, who was kind of, I guess, the most well-known Dag Nasty singer. Sean Brown is the original singer. They put out a new 7-inch, and it's basically the original version of the band, and they're going on a short-ish tour. Adam White, are you a Dag Nasty fan? Is this the return to glory for Dag Nasty, or is this just a fun little thing that they're doing?
I feel like Dag Nasty is one of those bands that has never properly gotten their due from, like, the modern-day internet punks. That, you know, like, everyone loves, you know, everyone loves Fugazi, everyone loves Minor Threat and everything like that, everything loves Bad Religion. Dag Nasty, I feel that even in the early days of punk news, it was always one of these bands that, like, everyone knew as being a band from that era, and everyone knew for, you know, basically for the Dave Smalley connection, but no one ever seemed to get that excited about it, on at least on our end, and I don't know why. I like Dag Nasty. Dag Nasty are cool. I like these songs. I'm actually a little bit of a fan in the way that they presented them. It seemed like a good use of streaming, where they went like, here's a clip of both songs, and then like, go buy the 7-inch, you dicks. I kind of like that. That seemed like a thing that would be right up your alley. I do not have any recollection of what Dag Nasty was like when Sean Brown was with them. I'm definitely way more familiar with the Dave Smalley version. So while I didn't get any nostalgic ping one way or another from listening to these, they sounded good. So, you know, I'm on board as far as, you know, audible enjoyment, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same boat. I'm not a Dag Nasty mega fan, although I do have that one Dag Nasty CD that has like pretty much everything on it. It's Can I Say and Wig Out at Denko's or whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not Sean Brown. That's Dave Smalley on that, I think. And Dag Nasty is an important band in that they're kind of the midpoint. Actually, they are the midpoint and maybe the only midpoint or the main link where hardcore went from hardcore to more reflective emo, but not like modern emo, you know, like Embrace style emo. Dag Nasty is kind of the first hardcore band to not be a totally hardcore band and, I guess, inject a little bit of brains and, I guess, gentleness or reflection instead of, you know, charging forward like the mid-80s D-beat influenced bands and the Boston bands and that kind of thing. So Dag Nasty is interesting to me for that reason. Am I super excited about this? No, I'm not going out of my mind, but I'll check it out. And I don't know, maybe I will become a Dag Nasty fan after really more investigating them more thoroughly, if you will. Although, honestly, I think to me they're always going to be a second-tier band. I don't mean that in disrespectful. I just mean that, to me, that late, I guess, like 83, 84 is a critical time in punk, especially hardcore, because for me, the softer stuff is too soft and I'm not interested in it. But the harder stuff sometimes is just too meatheaded and has no brains. It's a very fine line to walk for me. So anyways, I'll check it out.
Can I just mention that I have always, my entire life, loved the cover art to Can I Say? It's got like that, like green face with the eyes.
What does that represent to you? I
have no idea what it is, but I've always loved it. It's one of my favorite pieces of like punk rock cover art.
And actually, that title annoys me because it's like half a sentence. Can I say? Like, can I say what? It like leaves you like on a cliffhanger, and that annoys me. You know.
Just like, that's why you buy the record. You're like, well, can they say what? So you have to buy it and then go, but, go find out. It's a marketing ploy, John. That's what Dag Nasty was all about.
That's what Ian MacKay and Dag Nasty, all about the marketing.
It's just like those blog posts today where they're like, you know, what this fruit will do to your bowels may shock you, right? And then you have to go read and find out what.
You won't believe what happened to this bride on her wedding day. Click more to find out.
Yep. White Lung, who are awesome. They have released a new song. It is called Kiss Me When I Bleed. They've also announced a tour. This is the second track, I believe, maybe the third, that they've released from their upcoming record, Paradise, which comes out on May 6th. You can find a link to stream the thing over on Punk News, and you can also find a link to the tour dates. They're hitting Europe. They're playing in their their home country of Canada. They're going to be in the U.S. So they're going all over the place to support this thing. If anyone remembers back to the first time that we talked about White Lung on this show, with regards to this record, at least the first song that they released off of Paradise was called Hungry, and it sounds nothing like the abrasive screaming punk band that White Lung has been in on their past, what, 2-3 records. It's like a new wave song. It is, you know, it's super chill, and it's, you know, probably the most polished thing they've ever done. And not poppy in kind of like the bad sellout way, but poppy in a, you know, early new wave way, quite different from what this band's done. Kiss Me When I Bleed is a little bit closer to what White Lung was, you know, in their earlier incarnations, but it still is benefiting from the, you know, the super slick production that's on this one. So this is going to be a huge record for these people. It's either going to, I don't know if people still care about this or not, but like, it's either going to alienate a whole bunch of people that wanted that abrasiveness, or it's going to make them blow up in some way that they had not expected amongst the alt radio crowd. But yeah, so you should go check it out. It's interesting. Did you check this out?
I did. As to my prediction, I think they will blow up, at least to some degree. I think they will have a positive reaction from both their core fan base and from new fans. You know, for the past year, I've been talking about Ceremony. Maybe I should stop talking. Have I been talking about that whole Ceremony thing too much, Adam White, as an example?
You were wounded by the Ceremony thing.
I don't even know why. I don't have anything in the game whatsoever. The point is this, is Ceremony's fan base could not go with them, and they couldn't really get a new fan base with their new sound. White Lung's fan base, I think, can go with them, and here's exactly why. White Lung's fan base, and I'm going to generalize, but it's kind of the truth. Ceremony's fan base was firmly within the hardcore punk crowd. White Lung's fan base was never firmly within the hardcore punk crowd, although they might have had fans that were hardcore punk. White Lung's fan base was very much in the cooler, hipper New York, Montreal, Canada scene. You know, cool people that, you know, go to coffee shops and, I don't know, whatever cool people do. I don't know.
I'm not wear sure. Hats.
Wear hats. So I think that type of fan, although all groups of people have their faults, and of course that group of people has their faults, that they tend to be incredibly flighty, you know, and kind of dicks. I think that fan base generally can be intelligent.
Dig yourself a hole here.
Whatever, man. Listen, who can I piss off that I haven't pissed off? I've pissed off everybody. You know what I mean? You know, I've had some artists that love me and then hated me, and they come back around to loving me again. So life's a cycle, Adam White. Life's a cycle. The point is this, is I think White Lung's fan base will go with them, because White Lung, even though they're changing their sound, they're still very much White Lung. This is not like a pop record. They're not making a Madonna record, although even that I think would be considered cool these days. And so I think the fan base will go with them. I was pleased by this, because my issue with a lot of White Lung song albums is all the songs are cool, but they all kind of sound the same. I think a varied White Lung album is the key to success, and I think that might be what we have here.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, I mean, this band has put out a lot of cool stuff, but I can never listen to more than like 2 or 3 of them at a time. Like, if I get to the end of one of the White Lung records, I feel that I've been just like, I've been kicked around, I've been beat up and like orally assaulted by the thing. Like, it is loud and it is unrelenting. So to have them do something that has, you know, a huge, like a really big, I don't know if it's a dynamic range, but I guess dynamic range, you know, between the different kinds of stuff that is on there is going to be cool. Like, I'd like to hear, you know, a slick new wave song by them, you know, put up against a hardcore song, put up against something in between. That interests me a lot more than hearing another, another record that's like the same as like Sorry would be. So yeah, I'm in. I'm cool.
And another cool thing, here's a quickie for you, Adam White. Alternative Tentacles Records, Jello Biafra's record label, they are reissuing the very first Metal Urbane 7-inch record. It's called Panic. It's going to be out for Record Store Day. They're going to put out 1,000 copies, and I think a little while later, Alternative Tentacles is going to reissue the entire Metal Urbane discography. I don't know if it's going to be a box set or separate releases. Adam White, do you know anything about Metal Urbane? Are you excited for this? Are you unaware of the band?
I know nothing. Well, what do I need to know?
Here's what you need to know. And honestly, I avoided this band for a long time, and I think it was xenophobic of me, and for that I apologize. This band is French, and I was like, well, listen, I'm not going to listen to a French punk band. Metal, I was wrong.
Metal. This is like a freedom fries thing.
Well, not that. It's just I don't. Well, should I be completely honest here? Maybe I shouldn't. Let me put it this way: I didn't necessarily think the band would be good because they were French, and I was wrong, and that's a wrong thought for someone to have. But I'm being honest, but I corrected myself. I was informed. I listened to Metal Urbane. Metal Urbane is one of the earliest synth punk avant garde punk acts. And they are really, really, really cool. So I'm excited for this. Let's play a. Should we play a song, Adam, or should we just blow through some short stories? What do you want to do? Oh no, no.
No, I think you need to play a song, but I think you need to prefix it with this next story.
Yes. As we all know. So, yeah. Okay. As we all know, Leftover Crack. They recently released an album called Constructs of the State. They recently were down in Australia and they did a tour. While down there in Australia, the land down under, they recorded a cover of Men at Work's Land Down Under. Adam White, what did you think of Leftover Crack's cover of Land Down Under by Men at Work?
It is way more fun than it has any right to be. This is one of those songs from the 80s that it feels like during the era of bad ska covers of 80s songs, in which, John, like, I want to say that, like, was at least a 40-year span. Like, for 40 years, we had nothing but bad ska covers of 80s songs. And we only,
no, that,
like, as a society emerged from the murk of this endless dark age about 5-10 years ago.
And not only that, though, is they only actually pulled from, like, 80 songs. Like, there's, like, 57 bands did Take On Me by A-ha.
Yeah, like 600 covers of A-ha's Take On Me, like 600 covers of like Come On Eileen. Oh God, what else? There was so many that were just playing the same fucking song over and over again. And this fits the bill in that it is a song that by anyone's read today is just kind of one of these quirky anachronisms. You know, people probably think about this in the same stripe as they think about, like, I don't know, like the Safety Dance or something like that. But this cover is awesome. It is so much fun. They keep the little, I don't know, was it like a flute? Like, they keep the little hook to this song that everyone knows, and then they rock out to it in like a Leftover Crack ska punk way, and they play it like they play it completely straight. Like, it's completely on the enjoyable, having fun Leftover Crack end of the spectrum, not the we're gonna growl at you and be scary Leftover Crack end of the spectrum. So, you know, this is great. Yeah, everyone should go check it out. It's so much fun.
This is why Leftover Crack is great, and this is why Leftover Crack is so much better than most other bands, and this is why a lot of other bands and even fans hate them. It's because Leftover Crack has the ability to be very serious, very grave, you know, very what's the word I'm looking for, you know, just very serious, very dry, you know, very this is what the government's about. But then they can just flip the table and just be completely weird and completely wacky, and it doesn't come off as hokey. It just comes off as them being the weirdos that they are, and it's awesome. And that's why I love Leftover Crack. I think they're one of the most clever bands there is around today. But listen, a lot of people don't know, man, Men at Work is actually like a really, really good band. They've got three albums. Their first two albums are excellent. The third album is not that good. They formed in Australia, I think, like 1978, and they sort of started out as like a new wave band, but I don't think they started out as a new wave band because they wanted to be punk or new wave. I think they started out as a new wave because they were a rock band, and they said, well, to be popular, you kind of got to play new wave, so we're going to play new wave. So the first two Men at Work albums are actually really, really solidly written albums. I wouldn't say it's punk. I would say it's mildly new wave. There's a little bit of ska in there, and it's just great, well-written songs that actually have some very punk themes, if you will, although they're not a punk band. Like, they've got anti-nuclear war songs, and they've got you know, anti-military songs, that kind of stuff. They've got songs about being paranoid and insane, which is a very punk rock thing. And I'm going to play a song off their first album, and it's called Helpless Automaton. Yeah, I can't say that word.
All right.
And it's about being trapped in a dead-end job and not knowing how to get out of it. And this is Men at Work, and they're a great band. And I mean that unironically. Men at Work. Ha, ha, ha.
shimmery in my pocket. I even got a ducat from you. I went to the man. I told him I'm wrong, but was what I am. But he just smiled.
And we are back. And that was Men at Work. And Men at Work is great. Adam White, let's talk about a couple of... Oh, no, we got tons of stories. So we'll just pick a couple of random ones, and then we'll go from there. How that sound?
Yeah. There's a lot of cool media, a lot of cool stuff that popped out this week. So we can blast through it all or whatever you want to cover, whatever you want to tell the people.
Well, I'm going to pick the one I want to talk about the most, and we'll see how it goes. Then we can cover whatever you want to cover. Leigh Butcherette's Davey Havok and Tony Kanaal of No Doubt recently did a cover of Ziggy Stardust, of course, originally by David Bowie. I've got three thoughts on this release. Adam White, did you have a reaction to this live version?
Not a great one.
Indeed.
Okay, then we're on the same we're on the same page. I think
we're jiving.
So yeah, I mean, That record, Ziggy Stardust and Spiders from Mars and everything like that, the Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust is sacred territory for me. And a lot of bands I like have covered it, so I'm not against people covering it, but it's gotta have that pop. It's gotta, you know, this was a little bit too rote, a little bit too predictable, I feel.
Ah, see, I sort of disagree. I did not like it that much either, but I disagree with your analysis. Here are my three points. First of all, Leigh Butcherette's, they are a phenomenal live band. Not the greatest live band I've ever seen, but one of the greatest live bands I've ever seen. They're the kind of band that gets respect from other bands a great deal, and their live show is that great, but they just don't seem to really catch on with the general audience. And I don't know why. I don't know what the formula for that is. Maybe they're just too weird, or maybe their songs are too complex. I think they are better live than on the record, so maybe that's it. But Leigh Butcherette's is a phenomenal band. Second, I think it's cool that Tony Kanaal is doing this. I mean, I think now that No Doubt is essentially broken up, I mean, I think he's just hanging out, you know. And
he absolutely looks and acts like Tony Kanaal. Of course he is, because he's him. But you see him in this video, and you go like, all right, you know, there he is from like every No Doubt music video I've ever seen. There he's just bopping away.
I mean, let's be real. Tony Kanaal is rich. Anybody in No Doubt is rich. But he still kind of has that punk vibe to it, you know, or maybe it's not a punk vibe. Maybe it's a performance vibe. But I enjoy that he still, you know, does the OC punk stance, if you will, you know. Let's talk about Davey Havok.
I have some Davey Havok sympathy. He's written a lot of songs and a lot of records that I really like. Him and I have not been on the same Wavelength? Wavelength is a predictable way to say it. I was going to say, like, we've been riding on different cars on the train for the past little while. I don't know if that means, though. I don't know. Like, he went and he shot for pop stardom, and he gave up on a little bit of the weird that he had, and he tried to embrace, like, Davey Havoc as the sex symbol. Mm-hmm. And, that wasn't going to do it for me. And, you know, you saw it when, like, AFI's imagery changed when they signed to a major, when they stopped having all that really cool cartoony art by the artist who I can't remember right now. And everything started to look very, very slick and very, very made for, you know, public consumption. You think of like the cover of like Crash Love or something like that, or any of those latter day AFI records. And it's just he hasn't been doing a thing that I've really been down with. And there would have been a time where I would have told you that, you know what, who I want to hear cover, you know, Bowie being a weird androgynous space alien is I want to hear Davey Havoc do that, because that seems like that'd be Davey Havoc's bag. But, you know, I watched this and he did fine, but he's not.
He ain't Bowie.
He's not being weird enough. He's not like he's not even being as weird as Davey Havoc should be. by Davey Havoc weird standards, not even by David Bowie weird standards.
See, I actually disagree. Like, I think he's trying to be weird. Like, he really like hams it up and he like squeaks. He's like, Ziggy played guitar. Like he like squeaks at like the end of like every phrase, which is like weird. But
yeah, but I feel like he's like doing a signature thing. Like, I don't think he's like he's doing like everyone's expecting me to throw some Davey Havoc squeaks and woes into this. Like, he's not, you know, he's not embracing his inner weirdness. He's got surface weirdness. Well, see, I don't even know what point I'm trying to make. I didn't like it.
See, I thought he hammed it up too much. However, no one seemed to notice this. Is he's not actually doing the David Bowie version. He's doing the Peter Murphy Bauhaus cover of David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust. And I can prove this is if you watch the stances he makes and the way he phrases the part where they say mashed up his hands or whatever, it's the exact same as the Peter Murphy version. So the Peter Murphy version is already a slightly hammy version of the David Bowie version, and I feel he's hammying up the hammy version, and that's why it kind of falls flat.
Anyways, you guys can go find this video on Punk News and check it out for yourselves. See what you think. I want to make mention of a handful of songs that came out of the past week and a half that coincidentally all from bands out of Ontario. So yeah, I'm fitting the stereotype here. But it's all good and it's all fun and it's going to make your spring and summer just a great time. And I'm just going to rattle through them here so that you guys go check them out. First of all, band out of Toronto called Pew Pew Pew. We played them on the show before. They used to be called Pew 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 Gunshots, and then they took away the little bracketed gunshots after their name. And I don't entirely know this band's history, so I don't know if they've had some, there was like, you know, any formal reason for them doing this or what. But anyways, so they have a song out. The song is called Prequel to Asshole Pandemic. Which is a super insidery name for this song, because Asshole Pandemic was a song that was on their record that came out in like 2013 or 12. But anyways, they've got a song and a video for it. The video is super fun. Did you see the video for this, John, when we posted it?
I did not, Adam. I must confess.
It is, you should go watch it, because it makes fun of a lot of goofy punk rock stereotypes. And basically it's this guy that's like a stereotypical like 80s TV nerd. And he finds a box of Pabst Blue Ribbon, and then he drinks some. Then he realizes that he can be a punk rock party guy, and then he kind of runs around town handing out beers to people. It's fun. You should go check it out.
Oh, that record. I'm looking at the. He looks like the kid from the Beastie Boys' "Fight for Your Right to Party." I should watch this.
Yes. And a lot of the people that he's actually handing out beers to are as with most of these videos, like you know. Either band members or members of other you know, bands out of that scene. So it's one of those like all of our friends, we're gonna get together and make a dumb videos. Anyways, though, that record is coming out on June 10th on Royal Mountain Records, which is the album or the rap album, the record label that put out Pup's first full length the year before they signed to Side One Dummy and released it again in the U.S. So these guys are friends of the Pup. Speaking of Pup, last week they released a song that is the lead track from their upcoming record, which is called The Dream Is Over. This song is called If This Tour Doesn't Kill You, I Will. And they have a video for it in which the band tries to kill each other. So you can go check that out. That record is out on May 27th on Side One Dummy. So you can go find all that there. And then the third one that you should definitely listen to, and it's more of a serious song and maybe a little bit less goofy than the Pew 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 or the Pup songs, is Graze out of Toronto. The guys are I'm going to go see this Friday, this Saturday, whatever the hell day it is. I hope I get the day right. In Hamilton, playing with the Donuts Adonis. Graze has a new song called Blown Out. It's from their upcoming full-length, Outer Heaven. If you've listened to Graze before, so if you've listened to, say, their 2014 full-length, if anything, this was a band that was very loud and very fast, but the last song in that full-length really hinted that they were gonna slow it down and do some interesting stuff. And everything that we've heard so far from this new one, from this new record called Outer Heaven, it seems to bear that out, where this band is opening it up. They're taking their sound to places it hasn't been before. So new video, new song, it's called Blown Out. You can go check it out. It is also linked on Punk News. It'll be linked in the article that comes with this story. So yeah, go listen to all these cool bands from Toronto, and then send me $5. That's what I'm gonna do. You have anything else you want to talk about, John? Yeah. Any other
I'll just mention this super quickly, is Alice Cooper is going on tour with the Hollywood Vampires. The Hollywood Vampires is just Alice Cooper, Joe Perry, and Johnny Depp. I don't know why.
You couldn't even say it.
But why does Johnny Depp have to be a part of this? Why, you know? But anyways,
he makes it less. It's less defensible for you to like this band because Johnny Depp is in it. Makes your life harder because you got to explain that.
I have to rationalize why I want to enjoy something that Johnny Depp has had any part of. But the point is, this is the Hollywood Vampires were a drinking club in the late 70s in LA, and almost all of them are dead except for a few of them. Alice Cooper is one of the only ones left. He's got a new covers band called the Hollywood Vampires, where they play all the songs of the guys that were in the Hollywood Vampires that are now dead. They cover Led Zeppelin, they cover Harry Nilsson, they cover Badfinger, they cover I'm trying to think some other ones. I think they might cover Cream, they cover The Doors, they cover Jimi Hendrix. Really cool. So they're going on a short tour. I'm almost definitely going to go. I'm excited for this. And some people are like, what is Alice? Good thing Alice Cooper, you know, like Alice Cooper, really relevant. Well, let me tell you, Alice Cooper is relevant because without the Stooges, without Alice Cooper, without MC5, punk rock seriously might not exist. And that's no joke. Adam White, so anyway, go see the Hollywood Vampires, or at least check out the record because I think they're pretty cool. I'm excited to check them out. Adam White, is there anything else that we should address? Anything big happened this week at Punk News?
All right. People have probably been waiting for this. So, you know, before we wrap up the show, we should address the incident that happened over the past weekend on Punk News. So what I kind of want to say, as, you know, I guess the managing editor is... And that's why you are supposed to take the eggs out of the pan before they're completely set.
Oh, man. You know, that's going to solve a lot of issues that
otherwise, they're tough. And then, you know, so I hope that was useful.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Anyways.
All right. I think we're done for this week, John. If anyone wants to email us, podcast@punknews.org is how you get a hold of us. And we'll see you guys offer 296, I guess, next week.
296, 300, coming down the lane.